Welcome to Conversations with David Lewis. Today, poetry on steroids. Continuing my conversation with Anis Moshgani, the poet on steroids. In the first part of the interview, we talked about the beginning of his career, what it's like to be a poet, how one survives as a poet. We heard some wonderful performances, and let's start today, Anis, talking about your new book, the Pocket Knife Bible. Tell me about the book.
Which you
not only wrote, but you also illustrated.
Correct. So it's a weird little book. It's a bit of a departure from some of my other stuff. I have three previous books that are all collections of poetry, and this one started out as being a book of poetry, but it was very, very challenging to create. There was a lot of stuff happening in my personal life that was very challenging, as well as I wanted to create a book that was illustrated. And while my other books had random illustrations in them, illustration didn't have a consistent creative relationship with it for a number of years. And so I was trying to find my way back to having it be present. You know, it's sort of like having an old dear friend that you haven't talked to or visited with in many, many years. And then you guys are hanging out and you're like, is it the same? I feel like it's the same, but I don't know what to talk to you about. And so as I was exploring that path, it took a very long time to find my way to what the book finally ended up being, which is kind of like a strange little novella told from the perspective of me, circa 7-8 years old. And it's a lot of just kind of told in the form of a story, these sort of stacked observations of my life around me growing up in New Orleans. And a lot of it deals with this small boy and experiencing his life and the city and his family and the dreams that he has when he goes to sleep. And so that's like the first chunk of the book. And then the conclusion of the book is him traveling through the country of his dreams as he sleeps. And he ends up encountering this young man who, unbeknownst to him, is himself in the future. And so it's sort of like a weird kind of like time travel book where both me as an adult and me as a child interact with each other in the same space. And it's filled with sort of pictorial poems that are illustrated throughout the book.
Can you do the one where you talk about how you hate your name?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah, growing up with the name Anis is a...
Anis Moshgani. Yes, yeah. That must be fun when you're in, you know...
I think I was probably the only six-year-old in America who knew how the word anus is supposed to be spelled, because that was invariably the most common mispronunciation. I got really good at, like, you know, on days when it was the substitute, to just sort of like be listening for the alphabetical order. And when I knew my name was coming and I would see the strange wrinkle cross across her face, I just pipe up and be like, Anis, right here. Magnolias cover the ground. The sidewalk in front of the Ferret mansion is made of bricks, and the bricks are all out of order and covered in moss. The mansion is the biggest house in New Orleans. It's spooky. Its yard is like a jungle, and there are so many magnolia trees on its sidewalk that even in the daytime, it is dark. We hold our breath when we walk past in case there are any ghosts around, but it's hard because the magnolias smell so sweet, and the whole block smells like them, and it is my favorite smell. Their petals are soft and white, like butter left out. They feel like my baby brother's cheeks. Me and Shoke and Mom, we plant a tree in front of our house. We have a new brother. His name is Nason. He's like a sailboat, a chubby sailboat. His name means spring rain cloud. Shokafe means blossom. I don't know what Parviz means. He's just Pop. I don't know what Terry means. She's just Mom. Or Carolyn, if she's talking to Aunt Diane or Aunt Lynette. I don't like my name. It has only four letters, but still sounds all corners and clumsy in my mouth, like trying to chew the pieces of a plate, and no one ever says it right. It means companion. I wish my name was Mike. It has only four letters and sounds like a knife.
That's Anis Moshgani reading from his new book, The Pocket Knife Bible. What are your favorite audiences to perform for?
it's a wide range. Like I mean, most of the shows that I do over the course of the year, like 90% of them are college students between the ages of 18 and 23. And that's, I'm really thankful that for that, and it's really great. Like they're really hungry, and they want to be there, and they want to listen, and they're excited for poetry. But it's also really nice to get to share work for people that are not familiar with me or what I do, and you can see in their face sort of like, you know, a change as you get to introduce, you know, or broaden, I guess, feasibly their idea and definition of poetry, and that's really exciting. So doing audiences like that, new ones, are always fun. It's also really nice to do small intimate shows, because I a lot of my work revels and thrives in the idea of vulnerability and exchanging that with people, and it's a lot less vulnerable, and it's a lot easier to do big shows, and you know, with thousands of people in a dark room. And I love doing those shows because, you know, I don't have to see them and look them in the eyes as often. But there's also a different kind of power that comes from being in, you know, a dimly lit room with 50 people, 60 people, and you get to see their faces and get to have a one-on-one conversation with them as you're doing the poems. And that intimacy and that vulnerability is something that's really beautiful.
And that's what you've been doing this week in Atlanta.
Largely,
At the secret hideaway that we won't tell anyone where it is, Grocery on Home, Atlanta's greatest mystery performance space.
It is a really wonderful place.
Agreed. Let me flip the question around about favorite audiences. What are your least favorite audiences? I mean, I have this wonderful image of somebody, you know, who likes your work saying, "Oh, he'd be great in a corporate environment," and you going in there and bombing. But you know, so what are your least favorite?
Well, I mean, like, so just this past weekend, I was on a giant boat for this really interesting, fascinating thing called Summit at Sea, and Summit at Sea is part of this organization called Summit. And what Summit is, it basically brings together a lot of people for a unique speaker-driven experience. It's sort of kind of like TED meets Burning Man is the soundbite that a lot of articles put upon it. And it's the community of people that come are very much coming from tech communities or communities of nonprofits and social change, social entrepreneurship. And so the event that I was at this past weekend was kind of strange, not to throw them under the bus, because it was a really fantastic event and a really fantastic time, but it was at times a challenging event to do poems for, because I was doing poems on one of the evenings at a dinner, and doing poems at dinners is fine. But this was like at a restaurant, and so it was like, you know, some people were coming in, some people were leaving, and so
the
like
clinking of the cutlery,
exactly. And so it's like you have to work extra hard to kind of like rope people in to have them listen, you know, because none of us can compete with food. You know, food is the best thing there is. Food is the greatest thing there is. You know, it's like, do I want to listen to someone telling me a poem, or do I want to eat this delicious food? I always want to eat delicious food, not listen to poems. So that environment is always like, you know, an interesting and at times challenging environment. So that's always like kind of like a strange thing with poetry work. But yeah, sometimes also doing like corporate type stuff, because you don't always know where these people's mindset is. You know, just like I said before, how it's really exciting to do work for people that aren't familiar with you. It's also, you know, it's also has the potential to be very, very scary and to bomb very largely, you know, which may be why that's an exciting venue to do, you know, because you don't know which direction it's going to go.
Right. So you know, your poem is very personal. You write about family, relationships, etc. You know, which poem made people the maddest, or made somebody really mad?
There's a poem that that comes to mind, where I was doing this tour with this nonprofit organization called To Write Love in Our Arms, and they deal with suicide awareness, substance abuse, self-injury. And so I was part of this tour that's all musicians, and during the show I do like three poems over the course of the night. and we were in Detroit, and apparently a group of people had come up to this venue manager during or after the show, and they were all, you know, huffing and puffing, talking about how they didn't come to the show to get offended by that poet guy. And we were trying to figure out what it was that I had said that had angered them so much. And it turned out to be a poem that talks about genitalia and talks about pooping, two things that are very present in all of our day-to-day lives. But apparently it was something that they felt was inappropriate to talk about in public.
Well, you know where I'm going next.
I was debating. I was like, should I talk about this poem? I feel like I'm being led into
I don't know if this will make it on the air, Anis, but we need to hear this poem.
We'll do. So this poem is called "Even If Somebody Pooped a Poem, It's All Right, 'Cause Somebody Somewhere Made It." I am invincible. Look at my hands, even you people out in Radioland. I'll describe them for you. They're huge. My hands are huge. My hands are big enough to buy somebody a cup of soup. On good days, they can catch bullets as if they were frisbees. I'm invincible. I can pick my nose and not care who sees it. We all have boogers. I know this. I have x-ray vision, and I can see that there are boogers in my nose as big and dirty as the ones in mine. So forget me and forget you too, even though we've all talked crap about people we never knew, even though every person in this world goes to the bathroom, sits down and poos. That's right. Miracle of miracles. I can take food, send it past my teeth, down to my tummy, where superpowers of superpowers, that food is miraculously transformed into poop. I'm invincible. I can flap my arms like a goose's arms, and a goose's arms are actually called wings, so I can flap my arms like wings. I can walk like fly. I can close my eyes and fall asleep and see pictures of the sun moving inside of my head. When I do, the sun looks fat and flat like a silver dollar, because you can't see all sides of it at the same time, but I know that they are there. I know that the sun is round, containing volume like a super ball. I know this because I'm invincible. I also know how to make Kool-Aid, whatever flavor you want. All that is required is sugar, water, and the power to stir. I also know what aliens look like. They look like extraterrestrials. I know this because I have seen them when I draw them. Can you draw them? I ask you, can you draw them? Not like how I can. I can draw them with green skin and tentacled arms wrapped around red and yellow bubble-shaped ray guns that can demolish whole buildings in a single shot. And Dave, you can draw them with brains inside of glass jars and robotic bodies, and your aliens are dancing with my aliens, and all of our aliens are dancing together in some space lobby, some space McDonald's somewhere, because all space people love french fries. Just ask yourself, do I love french fries? Yes, of course you do, because you are space people. Space people live on space planets, out in outer space, on some space planet, a space age away. Little space children with green skin and tentacled arms wrapped around red and yellow bubble-shaped ray pencils are drawing space people with two legs and two arms and hearts inside that go pumpy pump pump, and noses that are fat like boogers, and lips that are fat like kisses that open and close and open and close and open like poetry. They kiss like poetry. They breathe like poetry. They move like poetry. They poop like poetry. And sometimes they poetry that poop, but even when they poop that poem is still as strong as a string stuck inside of an ice cube, stuck inside of an iceberg. We, you and I, we are as unto diamonds. We are diamonds. And I know at times that all it takes to be invincible is to know you are such. And I know that you know this as well.
Anis Moshgani. So you became the, you know, the poetry champion. How does one become poetry champion? I mean, I have this image of like, you know, a knockout, you know, boxing competition.
It's closer to that than people think. Like, okay. Basically, they just put a bunch of poets into one room with one knife. And the person who walk out 20 minutes later is the poetry champion. You know?
Okay.
There's a lot of blood on my hands.
Okay.
So I'll try to be brief. With the poetry slam, how that works is individuals are given 3 minutes to share something that they wrote, and then there are judges picked out of the audience. And those judges are all just randomly picked. And they give a score to that poem between 0 and 10, just simply based on what their personal opinion and what they felt and connected with that poem was. And so this happens all over the country, all over the globe. And in these communities, they each have, in local communities, they each have their way of finalizing and selecting a team to represent their city and venue. And every summer in August, all these teams, 60 to 80 teams, come together in one other city, and they battle it out over the course of the weekend. And so when I was more heavily involved with competing, in 2005, I lived in a community where there wasn't a team. So at that juncture, I could apply as an individual poet. And so I competed and won that year. And then in 2006, when I was repping on the Seattle team, I also won that year. And so this is something that just sort of like, and it's gone through.
Do you get like a big belt with a heavyweight champion
belt? I wish it was a belt. A belt would be
awesome.
Or
just a bowling trophy.
It was trophies. And there used to be like a giant trophy for the team that would get passed around, that it was like a giant sword stabbed through books. Nice. But it was just sort of like in 2005 it was me and this woman named Janine that tied for first, and so we split it. And the trophies that they have were just like, my friends would joke that it was like a T-ball championship trophy, you know, like we were T-ball champions, because it just looked like, you know, just a random trophy that you would get like for playing Little League as a kid or whatever. So I have those floating around.
Well, you know, that's like, what was it? The sword in the stone, the sword in the book.
Exactly.
Well, my guest has been Anis Moshgani. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dave.
Really been a pleasure. Folks, Anis Moshgani's most recent book is The Pocket Knife Bible.